Our next case for argument this morning is United States, by and through Shavonik, against Apria Healthcare Group.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Let's wait for counsel to at least find a seat.
Yes.
Mr. Goldstein.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. This case forecloses the government's recovery of a completely delineated, non-overlapping case under the first-to-file rule in the False Claims Act. And our case differs by time, location, and involves different transactions. We feel that application of the first-to-file bar would provide an inoculation or immunization for future cases. That our case differs by 7 years in time and 2,000 miles. And if we provide, if on remand we proceed, we would be proving a distinct set of facts and providing a separate, different recovery for the government. And application of the first-to-file bar in this case would undermine the general rule and the intention and purposes of the False Claims Act, which is to encourage private litigants to come to the aid of the federal treasury and provide for the public fisc. Taken to its end, any case that would come, perhaps after the statute of limitations, is barred by the government's position here. And as I said, we would be providing a distinct set of facts and providing for a separate recovery. Now, none of the cases that have been cited from any of the other circuits that have looked at this material facts test or the identical facts test have addressed separate distinct time periods. This is a first issue nationally and definitely a first issue before this court. It would seem that the intention of the act to provide an impetus for first-to-file case is not diminished by our case, which is definitely second in time, but second in time by such a wide amount of time. The False Claims Act has a statute of limitation of 6 years or for 3 years upon discovery, or 6 years from the time of the act. This case is different in the Costa case and the Wickern case. The first filed cases were filed in 1998. They pled a specific time period of October 95 to 97 and related to San Diego, California. And the Wickern case was filed in 1999 and was amended in 2000. And it also pled a time period of 95 to 97. And it dealt with a regional area of western Missouri, Nebraska, and Kansas. Our case was filed in 2004. This wasn't within the statute of limitations from that case, and it was dealt with specific allegation of fraud from 2002 to 2004.
And I thought the earlier complaints were not specifically limited in time. Even though they referenced a time frame, they used standard sort of all-encompassing language about through at least this time period, and then the complaints also referenced a nationwide course of conduct.
Sure. The Wickern case pled the words at least 1997. And I think that's a stretch to extend that to include all time when the False Claims Act is supposed to be remedial in nature and to provide for an incentive for more cases. The amendments that provided for the False Claims Act, I believe in 1986, were to encourage more False Claims Act cases. So to read at least to include 7 years and 2,000 miles, I think is too expansive.
There's no dispute that the complaints overlapped in terms of the allegations of the sort of misconduct that was at issue.
Correct.
Comprising the false claim allegations.
Sure, and let me address one point about that. They were similar in their nature, but the Wickern case referred to a nationwide allegation regarding their computer system. But the claims at issue in this related to falsifying records and falsifying signatures and cheat sheets to doctors and filling out the forms. There was one claim that related to the computer system, which is upcoding or miscoding of of durable medical equipment. But the other claims were not necessarily nationwide in scope. So even if we had overlapping factual circumstances, that shouldn't trigger the first to file bar, because the intention of the act is undermined, and because, taken to its extreme, today I could file the same case, and they would argue that that case would be barred. And I think that's irresponsible to the plain reading of the statute. Now, the twist that comes in on this is that there was a settlement in this case. While our case was pending, the Department of Justice settled the case with Apria, and they specifically settled for the time period of, and I'm just looking to be absolutely correct, they settled for the time period of 95 to 98. And they settled for $17.6 million.
So why does the settlement matter?
Your Honor, I believe it matters because of the plain reading of the statute. The statute...
statute says that no action may be brought while some other action based on the same facts is pending.
Right, and their case was no longer pending.
No action may be continued. It says no action may be brought. So the question under the statute is whether this action was brought, that is, whether it was commenced at a time when a prior action based on the same facts was pending. That's why I asked why it should matter that that earlier action, which was pending at the time this action was brought, was settled.
Well,
you're the one who's asking us not to give the statute its normal reading.
We argued that that was the plain reading of the statute, because taken into
that's where you lose me. This earlier action was pending when this action was brought, was it not?
It was pending.
Right. And the Supreme Court has held in cases like McNeil against the United States that a statute in that form, don't bring new action while old action is pending, applies no matter what happens to the other action.
Well, in the first of
that's McNeil, that's Hallstrom against Tillamook County. There are actually quite a few in that line.
The pending part of this, though, is that that case was dismissed. It would that their argument would then also include cases that are filed today. And I...
No. Once the action was settled, any new action could be brought without regard to that bar. In fact, if the statute of limitations allowed it, you could have refiled this action consistent with that statute once the settlement occurred. But we're not here on a refiled action.
No. But our case was pending when their case was dismissed, and so I think that the reading of pending in that way precludes the intention of the Act, which is to encourage these filings. And additionally, Your Honor, that these cases are filed under seal, there would have been no way. This case was not parasitic in nature. There was no information of the other case to our plaintiff, so we would never have known that that case had been filed, and no party would. Because of that, I mean, we, under the general rule, we would be providing different facts, and we would be providing a different recovery. So I don't think that the first-to-file bar would even be triggered to apply the pending rule in this case. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Goldstein. Ms. Pang. You can take the podium down some if you want. The switch is on the right. No, don't move the microphones. You can move the podium.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a case concerning the proper interpretation of 31 U.S. Code 3730B5 of the False Claims Act, which is also known as the first-to-file rule. This statute provides that when a person brings an action under this subsection, no person other than the government may intervene or bring a related action based on the facts underlying the pending action. In the instant case, Ms. Shivanik's quitam complaint was dismissed because it was a related action based on facts underlying two.
Ms. Pang, what worries me about this case is how broadly one reads the facts. Take a hypothetical. Let's suppose that suit number one says that Grumman defrauded the United States by misrepresenting in the year 2000 that certain welds were properly inspected at its facility in Long Island. And then suit number two alleges that Grumman defrauded the United States by misrepresenting that certain landing gear on the F-18s was properly inspected at its facility in Georgia. Would those be two suits based on the same facts? Be the same defendant, of course, and the same program, but would they be the same facts?
Your Honor, I think that that's a factual decision that the district court would have to make as to whether...
I'm asking what your position would be about whether those would be the same facts for purposes of this statute.
If the facts, if the hypothetical concerned different programs or different...
No, listen to my hypothetical. The same defendant, Grumman, same program, they're building F-18 fighter aircraft. The first fraud in the year 2000 is false certifications of welding inspections in Long Island. The second fraud in the year 2004 is false certifications about inspections on landing gear in Georgia. Would those be the same facts for purposes of this statute?
Your Honor, again, it would depend on the essential facts, but I think that as you presented them, I think it's arguable that those would be two separate causes of action, two separate allegations.
And why? What about this phrase, the facts, would make those separate sets of facts?
As I understand your hypothetical, Judge Easterbrook, I believe that the first example you gave was false certifications as opposed to the second regarding false landing gears. Such is not the case here.
Yes, it's false certification of inspections, but it's of a different part, in a different place, in a different time.
If the facts are sufficiently distinct and as you stated, it's a different...
They involve different parts of the country and they involve different parts of the airplane.
And in that situation, it's possible that the second relator could pursue her case because the facts were sufficiently different. Here, that's not the situation.
Well, why is this any different? It involves different... It's the same program again, and it's the same certifier, but it involves a different kind of fraud, medical devices versus drugs. It involves a different time, and it involves a different part of the country.
No, Your Honor. The two prior complaints, the Costa complaint and the Wickard complaint, as the district court held, alleged nationwide ongoing fraud. Both of those two prior cases...
Well, look, I'm perfectly willing in my hypothetical to say that the complaint alleges that Grumman is engaged in all sorts of fraud in all sorts of places in the country, but the relator actually hasn't a clue that Grumman is engaged in false certifications of landing gear in years that haven't come yet. Right. The reason I'm trying to get at this is that normally when somebody refers to the facts, you're referring, that's the, if you think about sets of preclusion rules, there's a reference to the facts, that's very narrow, then the same transaction is a preclusion rule that's broader, and then you might have a rule that refers to fraud by the same party, and that would be the broadest thing of all. This appears to be on the very narrow end, same facts. It's not even as broad, it seems to me, as the same transaction test.
Your Honor,
I'm trying to figure out how it gets read as being so broad as to say any other fraud, you know, essentially of the same type by the same defendant in the history of mankind is the same facts.
Your Honor, if you compare the three sets of complaints that are at issue in the case, there are minute distinctions in terms of locations. Ms. Shavonik's complaint is limited to certain Illinois locations. However, the two prior complaints alleged...
Well, the first complaint can't, it seems to me, deal with these facts because the fraud alleged in this suit hadn't even happened when the first complaint was filed.
They alleged ongoing fraud. They didn't limit it to the 95 to 97 time period as Mr. Goldstein specifies. The district court held that it alleged ongoing fraud from 1995 through at least 1997 because the two prior complaints were filed in 98 and 99, several years prior to the 2000.
Is there some reason why the United States does not want private help in finding other related frauds?
Your Honor, the United States is very interested in encouraging private citizens, whistleblowers.
Not on your position. Your position seems to be that if you know of some other fraud committed by anyone who's already been sued for fraud, you should by no means tell anybody or file a lawsuit because there's nothing in it for you.
Your Honor,
that's the government's position.
Under the 1986 revisions to the False Claims Act, there are specific parameters under which a relator can pursue an action. And under Section 3730B5, the incentive that Congress intended to give relators...
I'm not trying to figure out whether we should ignore the statute. Same facts could be read broadly or narrowly. You're urging us to read it extraordinarily broadly. And the question I asked is, why do you think that is in the interest of the United States to read it extraordinarily broadly and take away the incentive of people who know about other frauds committed by the same defendant, by the same firm, to bring them to public attention?
Your Honor, the interest of the government is in having relators bring different material essential facts. So once the government has been put on notice as to one set of essential material facts, it has the information to seek out related facts. So
then I don't understand your answer to my Grumman question. Then you should be saying, as soon as there's any False Claims Act involving the F-18 program, that's it. The United States will take it over from there and investigate any future frauds involving the F-18 program.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the answer is probably somewhere in between the two, in that a complaint has to be sufficiently specific in order to satisfy Rule 9b. And if the relator's complaint is sufficient to satisfy Rule 9b, then it precludes subsequent relators who file actions that relate to that existing complaint. And that is the situation we have here. We've got two earlier filed complaints that allege the same essential material facts that Ms. Shavonik's complaint had filed. And this, although this issue is an issue of first impression for this circuit, four other circuits have addressed this very same issue and have unanimously held that Section 3730B5 bars the second-in-time complaint, such as Shavonik's, that is, alleges the same material facts. The 10th Circuit, 9th Circuit, D.C. Circuit, 3rd Circuit all have held that the public policy interests of the whistleblower provisions of the False Claims Act, as well as the clear language of the statute, bars a complaint such as Ms. Shavonik's. Mr. Goldstein states that there are no cases that hold that separate, that if a complaint alleges a different time period, then that's precluded. But that, in fact, is not the case. A case that Mr. Goldstein cited in his brief, the Ortega case out of the district court in D.C., addressed that situation. And that court said that even if you have a second-in-time complaint that alleges a different geographic location, a different time period, that complaint can be barred under the first-to-file rule. And in this particular case, even if Your Honor were to read the two first complaints as being narrow in time, it's under the first-to-file rule, it's still the case that Shavonik's complaint must be dismissed, and as was by the district court. For those reasons, we submit that the district court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Pang. Anything further, Mr. Goldstein?
Yes, Your Honor. A few quick points. The first is that this case does is distinct and completely different and separated not only by time, but by place and by transactions and by actors and by office. And so the court...
Does it make any difference that the first complaint alleged a nationwide conspiracy?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that there a nationwide conspiracy that was alleged in the Wicker complaint, but not in the Costa complaint, related to the computer system that was involved. And these claims were not only related to computer system upcoding. So the other point is that the other cases that have addressed the first-to-file rule were very similar cases. They didn't differ in time. They were the same types of transactions, and they didn't plead different times. The last point, and I see my red light has gone out. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement.